mics too.
Yeah, it'd be always be a better idea to have a nice solid microphone, Hogan, when we're doing the show. Good deal. We're like in the midst of the world's longest presidential campaign, right? It's probably a good idea to try to do something that's off of politics for a little while. I thought we would do that today. What do you think?
Yeah, we were so involved in it for months heading up to November. And so I thought when you came to me with this idea to do a podcast that really had nothing to do with politics, I thought, great. I think it's a really good, refreshing break for a lot of folks. So if people are watching, if they're not watching, you're wearing a Pirates jersey and a Pirates hat.
Yes.
So you're representing our next guest, at least to some degree, not to mention your own fandom. So that's important. That's a hint.
That is important. Yes, it is a hint. Before we get to that, I do want to put in a plug for my book, which is out now. Swing Hard, In Case You Hit It, My Escape from Addiction and Shot at Redemption on the Trump Campaign. This is partly about my experience in politics, most notably on the Trump 2020 campaign, where I was communications director, where we worked together. But it's also about my decades-long struggle to quit drinking and my battle to come back from addiction. I went from waking up in jail one day to flying on Air Force One with President Trump in less than 4 years. So it's meant to try to help people who were like me, addicts at one time I was. And it's available at Amazon, Target, Barnes & Noble, Walmart, anywhere you can buy books. So thank you very much. Swing Hard, In Case You Hit It, by me on sale now. Now that that's out of the way, let's get to this show because this is an awesome guest. I've been talking with this guy for a while about having him on, and finally today is the day. So let's get right to it because this is the Line Drive Podcast. And finally, the name of the show is the Line Drive Podcast, which is a baseball term, and we finally actually bring it around to talking about baseball and the Pittsburgh Pirates and probably the greatest player to ever don the jersey. We are joined now by a friend of mine, the one and only Roberto Clemente Jr., son of the great one, Roberto Clemente, the former Pittsburgh Pirate. Roberto, really great to see you. Thank you very much for joining us today.
Tim, as always, great to see you. Hogan, great to see you here as well. I'm very happy and excited to be here with you guys.
We're going to cover a lot of ground. Going to cover it all, and really appreciate you making time here. I should explain before we get going how it is that we actually know each other, because that would make sense. Like, how in the world? Why you bring Roberto Clemente Jr.? What?
What's the connection? Right.
That's a weird pull. Not politics, anyway. So my grandfather, Danny Murtaugh, was the manager of the Pirates for 15 seasons between 1957 and 1976, and he won the World Series twice as a Pirates manager. And his, without question, the best player on any of those teams, and probably in Pittsburgh Pirate franchise history, was your dad, the great one, the one and only Roberto Clemente, one of the greatest players in the history of Major League Baseball, and certainly the Pittsburgh Pirates. What was that like being a kid, before we get into your dad's life story and his legacy and all that, as a kid, and you have two brothers, what was that like when your dad is one of the most legendary ball players ever?
Well, there are two ways of looking at that question, right? There's the before the accident and after the accident. So before the accident, it was awesome. Dad was, you know, he was my big brother, my everything. I enjoyed going to the ballpark and coming home. A lot of players would come to the house after the games. Mom would start cooking late at night after the games, and some of the guys would come in to have dinner. You know, there was a lot of stories, a lot of laughter. Dad was a funny guy. A lot of people don't know. Dad didn't smile enough or laugh a lot when he was out, because he really thought that he needed to be serious and demanded respect, because he felt he was representing not only the Puerto Rican people, but he was representing a lot of the minority people, the folks that were, you know, the hardworking class. And he felt that he had a responsibility to really represent them well, because he wanted to pave the way for those coming behind him. And that's what he did. But behind closed doors, I really enjoyed him being dad and having a great sense of humor in many, many occasions. But he was a very serious man. He was a Renaissance man. He was I used to watch him shoot pool late at night and work in ceramics, pottery, and painting his pottery. He played the organ musically, the harmonica. But most for me, I really thought it was pretty cool to watch him work on people that would knock on the door at wee hours of the morning with crutches or wheelchairs come into the house. And he would work on them. He would have mom assist him on the living room floor. And there was there had two living rooms. And so there was a little wood thing that he would place the people there and work on them. And after a while, they will be walking out going like, I have no pain. And I mean, it was amazing.
What do you mean work on them?
Yeah, what does that mean?
Massaging them or
work? So dad, you know, a lot of people don't realize that when dad first came up in 1955, he came in already at damaged goods. He had a bad neck, bad back because of a car accident in 1954. Mm-hmm. So throughout his career, he would go and learn. He would go visit chiropractors all around the nation. Wherever he played, he would have a chiropractor. He would sneak out to go and see and get treated on, go work. But he started reading himself, started learning about, you know, the body, the human body, and how to deal with those different issues. So he became himself a healer. Aside from chiropractic, but he was a healer. And so it was amazing. It was amazing to watch him do those things. And people wanted to pay money. He said, no, I just make sure that, you know, you go take care of yourself. And that's who he was. But it was amazing to watch that.
You know, that reminds me, he was Catholic, right?
Well, he grew up Baptist. But yeah, he would go to any church that would be open on Sunday, whenever he was, he would go and visit. Yes.
Because I remember when you said he was a healer, there was a movement, and maybe it's still alive, right? To have him canonized as a process towards sainthood, even.
One of the reasons why it's not going to be looked at is because he grew up Baptist, number one.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so he was not a Catholic officially. He was Baptist. So a lot of people say, no, people pray to him. People have altars and they have shrines and they light candles. And you know, I read a story last week of someone that they prayed to dad for his wife to heal, and she actually is better. I mean, so he's saying that dad healed her, you know, like, wow, that's pretty amazing. But it is, you know, he was a special man. I always say that he was an angel that actually played baseball. That's the way I feel. That's the way he lived his life, for sure.
Yeah. This is why, I mean, I think here's a clip I want to show you during the course of this. I have some pictures, which I already showed some of them. And also some video. You know, there's really not a lot of video or film of him playing out there. You know, I've scoured the internet and there just isn't that much because it was so long ago, I guess.
So long ago, there was not many. I mean, there was no MLB Network, no ESPN. No, I mean, it was only the game of the week. You had one game on TV, really, on a Saturday, really, at the end of the day, in those days.
So here, this is a clip. This is amazing to me. There's so much in here. This is from Game 7 of the 1971 World Series. First, you'll notice right away, it's a daytime game. Game 7 of the World Series being played during the day. Amazing. So here you go. This is the deciding game of the 1971 World Series.
That is hit well. A Clemente home run, and the Pirates lead 1-0.
It looked like he hit a breaking pitch right over the plate. That's his 12th hit. He's one short now, tying Bobby Richardson's all-time World Series record of 13 hits in a seven-game World Series. He had a triple and a homer yesterday and a home run today. Let's watch his swing now. Look at him tee off. Everything in that 180-pound body whipping around. This one, he pulled the left center. Most of his hits have been the right.
So if you're watching on Rumble, you can see what that was. If you're listening to the audio version, that was, of course, Roberto Clemente hitting a home run.
And a disclaimer, if you're teaching hitting, that is what not to do in hitting.
I mean, he had such a remarkable swing, and the way every ounce of his body weight is on his front foot at the moment he makes contact. His back foot is off the ground.
Off the ground.
Yes. No, you have to be very athletic to be able to do that. And obviously he was, but it is amazing to watch him do that. I mean, in every clip, you can see everything that he used. And the bat was so heavy. I think that helped a lot in terms of the way he approached hitting. He would use a heavier bat for guys that were throwing heat and just a bit lighter when the guys were throwing junk.
Yeah, and that one, the one he hit right there was a big, fat curveball.
Yes.
He jumped all over it. So
that would be the really hanging curveball.
Yes.
Yeah, a hanging curveball. And they won that game in Game 7, and they're in therefore the World Series. He played in two World Series. Both World Series went seven games, 1960 and 1971. So he played in his career, he played 14 World Series games, and he had a hit in each one, at least one hit in every single.
He showed up. Like, yeah. It's like that's when you separate the prospect from the suspects, right? You can play all your career, but when you get to that stage where it really counts, you need to show up, and he did.
He sure did. I mean, that's what Bob Prince, who was the announcer, Pirates announcer for years, and a lot of people always said, you know, Pittsburgh is one of the very small market teams. It's obvious it's not New York, it's not Los Angeles, it's not Chicago, it's not even Philly for that matter. And when they got to the World Series, that was really the first time, because like we said before, there was not a lot of TV games.
Three things that happened in that series. One, that was the first time they played a night game in a World Series ever.
That's right. Yeah.
And I think that seventh game that when he became the MVP of that series, I believe that right after Bob Prince, the interview that he did to him really galvanized the Hispanic community all around the world, because it was the first time ever that on national TV someone spoke in Spanish, and they felt that he was speaking to them. And until this day, people remember that moment where they were watching that interview, and they said that if they didn't know anything about baseball or anything that was happening, they became a Clemente fan.
Yeah.
I don't want to go down a negative road here. By the way, do they just call you Roberto? They call you Junior? Do you have a nickname?
Roberto, RJ, Junior, you
RJ,
name it.
Junior. Okay, that's good. I like those. All right, RJ. Here's a question. So Tim and I were talking ahead of time about the tragic passing of your father and what he was doing when that happened. I think the audience would really appreciate kind of learning more about what he saw as an issue, how he tried to address that issue, and what happened.
You know, after the season in 72, every year he would go back to Puerto Rico. 1971, there was a tournament in Nicaragua where he managed the Puerto Rican team, the national team. And he went to Nicaragua. He befriended a lot of people. He said that Nicaragua at that moment reminded him of Puerto Rico when he was growing up. And he would go spend some time at the plaza and wait for people to come home from the buses from work, and he would interview them. And depending on what they say, he would give them a little money for their family to go eat. You know, so he really befriended the people there. There was a kid at the ballpark while they were playing there that was missing a leg, and he promised them he was going to come back with a prosthetic leg for him. Fast forward after 72, after the 3,000 hit, he went back to Puerto Rico to play, you know, in winter ball. And then the earthquake happened in Nicaragua. So he immediately started spearheading aid for the folks there. He sent three planes, two planes and a ship full of aid to Nicaragua. Now, when he got word that the militia, the Somoza militia, was taking the supplies to sell it in the black market, it was not getting to Masaya Hospital where he was sending it to, he decided to charter a plane while we were sleeping, actually, and decided to fly himself to be able to cross that militia line. And that flight, it was New Year's Eve. A lot of people were off. It's a big holiday. Nobody really works on the 31st, but a lot of the volunteers help load the plane without any knowledge of how to load a plane. The plane, later on, we found out it was not in any condition to be flying, but he took off. You know, I did warn him not to get on a plane. I had this premonition not to get on the plane. I told him, but he still went, and the rest is history. But that in itself is who he was. He, wherever he saw the need to help, he was there to help.
Wow. Let me see if I can pull up this picture. I did show it before, but this is a picture of you. Go ahead, Hogan.
And so the plane went down.
The plane, after a mile and a half after takeoff, the plane went down. There were a lot of witnesses of, you know, people were partying. People were in condos and they were looking out to the beach or whatever. And all of a sudden, they see a ball of fire coming down from the sky, not knowing what it was. Wow. And then a lot of people obviously heard either that night or that the next morning the news that the plane had gone down. So, yes.
I am so sorry.
So here is on the screen is a picture of you kissing. This is a very famous picture. I know you've seen it a million times, but when you see this, it's for the people listening on audio, it's a poster of Roberto Clemente's face, and it's young Roberto Jr. kissing the picture of his father. How old are you in this picture?
I'm seven. I'm 7 years old. I was seven when dad passed, and you know, every time that I see the picture, it's just a reminder, right? It's a reminder how much I missed him. To go and kiss a poster, obviously it's something that, you know, you're missing men.
Yeah.
Missing dad.
Oh, that's amazing. I'm sorry to.
It's a beautiful thing. I feel blessed that now that I'm older, I can even appreciate more of what he left us as a legacy, which is absolutely an unbelievable legacy that you have so many Hall of Famers in baseball or in any other sport that they're, you know, that's their called, you know, their life work. For him, baseball secondary, I believe the Hall of Fame is secondary to what he means when you hear the name Clemente. It's all about goodwill and being good to people.
Do you have when you see some of his old baseball buddies or other players in a league, and do they ever come up to you and say, hey, let me tell you what an impact your father had on my life? And if so, can you share one of those stories? And what does that mean to you, having lost him at such a young age?
You know, it's I do speak to quite a few of his teammates, even guys that played against him, that, you know, respected him because of how he carried himself. A lot of people don't know, but before the Players Association started, the initial meetings to really kind of organize the troops, if you will, all the meetings were being done in Puerto Rico during the winter time because it was up, you know, it was past the season. People could go and meet. So they would fly to Puerto Rico to have – Dad was playing in Puerto Rico. So they would fly because Dad was in Puerto Rico. And all the meetings for the Players Association were in Puerto Rico to organize it. Dad became voted in first rep by the players to represent the players with the league, with the Major League Baseball, which means, number one, they trusted him. They felt that he had a voice. He was eloquent, very intelligent. And all these guys, like Bob Watson, for example, all the stories that he told me that how he impacted him and the way he carried himself, all the stories from all the people around the league that spoke some things that he would do in secret. For not, you know, he didn't want anyone to know, but people started talking about the different things that he was doing for other players and family members and wives. He impacted a lot of people. So I'm very grateful that he left quite a legacy on and off the field.
There are members of my family still tell stories about their interactions with him. My dad, who, you know, you've met and, you know, your dad was in the Marines, the United States Marine Corps, and he had already been in the Marines. And my dad, my father, was much younger, and he was about to go into the Marines. He was about to go to boot camp. And so he asked your dad for some advice, like, hey, Roberto, I'm about to go into Paris Island. What do you, any advice? And your dad said, yeah, you know what, be careful about volunteering for stuff. And he told him a story about like one day he was in basic training and the drill sergeant said, hey, anybody has a driver's license, raise your hand. So your dad raised his hand and he said, great, you get to drive the wheelbarrow the rest of the day. And so he said, Tim, I'm telling you, don't volunteer for anything. Pretty funny. And then my Aunt Kathy, my dad's sister, her husband was in the Navy and had been was stationed in Puerto Rico. And like there are some worse places in the world than Puerto Rico to be stationed, right, when you're in the Navy. So anyway, she was pregnant at the time with her first child, and she didn't know what she was getting into. She's moving to a strange place, never been there before. You know, it's tropical. She's worried about mosquitoes and whatever. And so she asked Roberto any advice. And he said, here's the phone number for my doctor. If you have any troubles, call my doctor. And if anyone doesn't do exactly what you asked them to do the very second that you asked them to do it, you tell them that Roberto sent you. And no one will tell you no.
Yes.
I imagine probably true. So this picture here, I think this is based on the look of it. I think this was taken in the dugout at Three Rivers.
Yes.
This is you and your two brothers.
I remember the night.
You remember this? This is Luis. You and Luis and Enrique. Who's who here?
That is so Ricky, Roberto Enrique is on dad's lap. I'm in the middle and Luis is to my left, to your right. Ricky was always playing with my ears. He could not go to sleep without playing with my ears at that moment. But that evening, I remember very well, that was Roberto Clemente night at Three River Stadium.
Yeah, you guys look like you're pretty dressed up to go to a ball game.
Well, we were always dressed up. It didn't matter if it was a regular game or not. If anything was going on,
really?
We saw us in a suit. Yeah, we were. That's how mom dressed us. We were always decked out.
How about that?
And so that was Clemente night. And I remember because that's the first time ever that I saw dad cry. He was very emotional. Actually, the only time I saw dad cry, really, was that night. Hmm. And I can see, you know, I remember because they gave him a statue, a life-size statue of himself that later on they were doing pranks with the doctor with. But that night, yeah, it was a special night. He was overwhelmed with emotion. A lot of people flew in from Puerto Rico. Pittsburgh was giving him thank you. They gave him the thank you for what he had done and through his career here in the city. And he got very emotional. I remember that night very well.
Mm-hmm. And you still live in the Pittsburgh area, right?
I'm still in Pittsburgh, yes.
Yeah. So here's some other ones. This one is obviously of roughly the same time period, but here you guys are wearing uniforms. This is like father-son.
That's game, father, right? Yes, exactly. Yeah. Father-son game. We enjoyed those very much as well. Those were fun times. He was very proud of his three boys, and you know, those were fun times for sure.
Yeah. And here's another. There's your mom, Vera, yes. Right? Beautiful. That's woman. Mom.
Yep. She is.
She survived your father a long time, right? She only passed not very long ago, right?
2019, November. It was 2 days after their anniversary. But she, you know, she died married to dad. Never looked at another man, but she carried that torch. I believe that's why. After, you know, half a century, we're still talking about the man. It's because of her, how she carried that torch for sure.
Yeah. And, you know, having been to a lot of events and different gatherings with the Pirates over the years at PNC Park and stuff. And so like reunions of the 1960 team or the 71 team, you know, you go to all those things. And when your mother was alive, and she would arrive in the suite where the gathering was happening during the there's a real Pirates game going on, but all the old Pirates and family and stuff, they're in the suite somewhere in the stadium watching the game. And when your mother would arrive, a buzz would go through the box there. It was like the Queen Elizabeth had showed up. You know, oh, Vera's here. Let's go. And everybody had to go talk to Vera because she's like in Pittsburgh Pirate world, she's absolutely royalty. She's Vera Clemente, are you kidding? Pittsburgh, yeah, The first
you know, Pirates. That in itself, you know, and that started early, and I don't know how it started, but I remember going to Forbes Field, and Mom was always late. I mean, it didn't matter. We never got to a game on time, ever. So we would get there second, third inning, like, you know, always. And I remember every time that we would be walking down to our seats, like the whole section would stand up. Like it was like that whole thing. And I never understood why. I never really kind of clicked until later on when I got older and I start thinking back. I'm like, oh. It was, you know, it was actually the respect for her mom, and it was pretty amazing. It was pretty amazing.
So this is, here's one. This oh, there aren't too many pictures of the two guys together. This is a picture again. This is for the Rumble viewers. It's a picture of your dad, Roberto, with my grandfather, Danny Murtaugh, who was
who belongs in the Hall of Fame, by the way. Who belongs in the Hall of Fame?
Thank you. Thank you very much. He's gotten close a couple times. He's on those weird veterans committee now, and he's under the auspices of those. And so was on the ballot like 2 years ago, I think. but didn't quite it. Maybe one day. Maybe
we
one
need
day.
A no, Tim, you and I run campaigns. We got to get a and campaign
there
going
here.
There
you go.
Tried it. Well, Roberto, Roberto wrote an op-ed for us the last time. And
I'm in, and I'll do it again.
Yeah, I appreciated that. Yeah, that was in the Pittsburgh paper making the case. We'll have to try it again. Go ahead, Hogan.
What I think is so fascinating, too, obviously your father was an incredible ball player, right? Setting records, doing all the things he did. But what I'm finding out, not just in this conversation, but having a pre kind of interview with Tim, how much like philanthropic work he did, how much he cared about the average person. You're talking about him basically holding chiropractic sessions in your living room growing up. So it's just kind of fascinating to see how much he didn't just receive from baseball, but what he gave back to the community and so many around the planet. I just find that to be so heartwarming. And in a time where so many people are divided and all this political nonsense goes on, you take a look at America's pastime, baseball, and you see someone like your dad, and the legacy he leaves behind is somebody who again, not just played at the top of his game and was an elite athlete setting records, but also what he did for the average person, to me, seems like such a great story. I mean, how proud are you of both of those legacies for him?
You know, very, very much so. I mean, we you know, my two brothers and I were the ones that are left and our kids, but I can tell you that we're very proud. Because, you know, he lived for 38 years. He only was on this earth for 38 years. We're talking about him 50 years later.
Yeah.
The impact that he actually left for what he did in 38 years and still giving at the end of the day, his, you know, how he still inspires kids that are learning about him at third and seventh grade. We get notes from kids that are doing their end of year projects on him. And they become Clemente fans. Never saw him play. They will never see him play, but they kind of connect. They have this connection with the story because if it's a human interest story, it's not a baseball story. It's a human interest story. And how we can all get something out of all the layers of stories and on who he was as a human being, we can take something out of that. And I think that, you know, we're proud that, you know, just now we just screened the Clemente documentary in Austin, Texas, 2 or 3 weeks ago. And we're hoping that someone's going to pick it up because I truly believe that the ones that don't know the story, even the ones that know the story, are going to learn more about him. And the people that are the fans that are fans of him are fans of the little that they know about Clemente, which is pretty cool.
Hey, real quick, Tim, I got to jump in a second, but just real quick, tell our listeners, our viewers, what are some of the documentaries, the shows they can see about him? I mean, give some titles, if you know where you can find them, because I think a lot of people are going to go up and start looking for some of these things and watching. I know I am.
Is this Hogan, new one? This new one is produced by LeBron James, right?
So LeBron is involved in this one, but I can tell you, there are so many different. I mean, the list is long. If you go And I wish I had the list on me right now, because the amount of books that have been written on Dad, the amount of documentaries that have been done, it's amazing. The amount of together JFK and Dr. King, like, they don't have like enough statues and parks named after them that are named after my father, which is amazing.
Yeah.
So
I read somewhere that there are 40 schools named.
Yes. And growing. There are more. Every year there's another one. Yes.
Wow.
And 200 public parks named after your dad.
Yes.
In this country. 40 schools and 200 public parks.
And the thing is that it's not only here in the States. We're talking about the first namesake. Right after the accident, they were building a new stadium, which is still standing. And they didn't have a name for it. So they named the new stadium Roberto Clemente Stadium or Coliseum out in Mannheim, Germany.
Really?
Yes. Germany. It's still standing. Still there. They're still using it. And it's called Roberto Clemente Stadium. In Mannheim, Germany. You have Liberia, Africa, for example. They were trying to decide how to honor Dr. King or my father at the same time. So one would take a poster, the other one would have a coin, a currency. And Dad got the currency and the coin of a $1 and a $10 coin, and Dr. King got the poster.
Wow. Amazing. So this is, I found there's one more highlight. This one's really quick. This one of everybody talks about his batting prowess, and he was certainly a great hitter. Exactly 3,000 hits. He's the only, I want to point this out. There have been slightly more than 20,000 players who have ever appeared in at least one Major League Baseball game, just over 20,000. Of those 20,000, only 33 have ever reached 3,000 hits. And your dad is one of, that's as of today. And your dad has obviously not played since 1972. So only 33 ever. And of that, so that right away, if you're in that club, you're clearly one of the all-time greats of all time. Your dad is the only member of that club to have exactly 3,000 hits, because
the gatekeeper gatekeeper of
that
club.
The gatekeeper, is that what it's called? Okay, yes. Yeah, you gotta get past Clemente to get in. That's right. so it was the last day of the 1972 season, and then of course the plane crash happened in the offseason on New Year's Eve. But he was also, I think that I'm, you know, I know a little bit about baseball. I think he probably, you could make an argument that he's the greatest right fielder who ever played the game defensively. As far as with the glove and with the throwing arm, he won what, 12 gold gloves?
12 consecutive.
12 consecutive gold gloves. Consecutive.
Yes.
Now watch this. Hogan, I bet you've never seen this highlight. Watch this.
In the ninth, the Orioles go for the tiebreaker. Buford with Belanger on first and two out. And only a good play by Clemente keeps Belanger from scoring. Mark, come on, we can do it this time, part of the game. Come on, we did it.
Amazing. All the way from the right field corner on a rope on the fly to his best friend in baseball, Manny Sanguin.
Manny Sanguin, yes.
Yeah.
And Manny has a lot of stories about the throws, because that's one thing that people don't realize. How unnatural it was to have that such a strong arm. Still to this day, I believe that, I mean, I'm still kind of looking forward to seeing an arm like that, because I still haven't seen it.
No.
The people talk about, you know, Parker and a bunch of guys that have great arms. I still have memories. My old roommate, Michael Mays, Willie Mays' son, Michael and I, you know, always discussed, you know, talking about, you know, who was better, which dad, Mays or Clemente. And then I'll give you the power. I'll give you this. There's no way the arm.
Yeah, there's no way Willie Mays had as good an arm as your dad did. No way.
No, they actually, Dad and Willie, you know, they played together in Puerto Rico in the winter ball, right? But Dad was very, very young. Dad was like 20 years old when he was – it was actually next to Willie playing in the same field as the outfield. But they played, they went to Nicaragua. They went to Nicaragua, went on somewhere, and they did an exhibition, a game. And they actually did a throwing contest from the outfield And I hear stories there in Nicaragua saying that Willie Mays and Clemente battled it out throwing the ball. Clemente won. There's, you know, I said, yeah, so I told Michael, yeah, go get it. They did it, and Dad won anyway. So,
yeah. And he was never like he's not a big guy. He was just
180 pounds, it said.
Just 175, 180, 5'10, really, you know, 5'10 and a half.
That's what I weigh. I can't even throw a ball across my apartment.
So he was an athlete. He was a freak of nature in many ways. He threw the javelin in high school.
Yeah.
And they say, oh, to throw the javelin. So the first throw he made ever was just a few feet, 2 or 3 feet, maybe 3 feet from the record. So he didn't even know how to throw a javelin. So the first time he threw it, he was like that. He broke the record. And he had the record until they got rid of they you know the school was gone, and he kept the record. But yes, he had that arm but not only the arm strength, but I think the accuracy was the most amazing part, because wherever he wants to put the ball, that's where he put it.
That's amazing, really amazing. So let's Hogan might have to jump here in a second, but we can continue on Hogan if you have to.
Yeah, and let me just say real quick before I. Roberto, this has been absolutely amazing. Thank you so much. I'm saying my thank you and goodbyes earlier in case I had to roll, but how impressive. What a great life. And I love the legacy he leaves behind, but also the one that you're carrying on and all you're doing to draw attention to it and you know, carry on actually his legacy as being a good person to other people too. I love that. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Hogan. Appreciate it.
Go ahead.
This picture here that you can see on the screen if you're watching on Rumble, this is moments after the 3,000th hit, I believe. Isn't that right?
Proud as a peacock.
And that is just a quintessential picture of Clemente standing. You know, he's got 1 foot on second base, standing with his fist clasped over his chest and just so proud. 3,000 hits, the big moment, right?
That moment right there was captured. Like, there, that one and the one tipping his cap, that happened in milliseconds. So I was so happy that the photographer was able to capture this moment because it was a quick, he was not a show, you know, he was a showboat. So he was like, boom, boom. And they captured that piece. So I'm very happy that they did.
So, and then I want to switch pictures here, and this will get us into a segue to talk about the stuff that you and your brothers and your family and the foundation and all that are working on these days. Here's a picture of you and your son, little Ro, Roberto Clemente III, who has become pals with my two little boys, and they hang out every time we go to Pirates games at PNC. The three of them run around and, you know, hide under tables and the crap that little kids do. What is this? You guys are throwing out the first pitch here at a game somewhere. That's not PNC Park, though, is it? This is
City Field. This is a City Field. We have 19 former Clemente Award winners around surrounding us. You can see Al Leiter right behind me and Jim Tomey behind Little Row there. But that was Clemente Day. Pirates were playing the Mets and the 50th anniversary of the Clemente Day. So we were very happy to be in New York. That was a special moment to be able to throw out the first pitch with my son there at Citi Field. I just noticed we have the same expression in our face, which is kind of funny.
Yeah. You know what? You're thinking, don't bounce it. Don't bounce it.
No, and I threw... I threw the ball to Carlos Delgado, and he threw the ball to Curtis Granderson. And whole day prior of this, Curtis was saying, you know, I hope I don't drop the ball. I hope I don't. And he put that in his mind, and he dropped the ball.
Really? So, Curtis Granderson did. That's funny.
Yes.
So what does Ro know about his grandfather? Obviously, they've never met. Is he old? And how old is he now? Is he six, seven?
Five. He's five and a half. He'll be six in June, late June. But he's understanding who his grandfather was. He's really taking it in. I mean, he's really learning who he was as a human being. He knows that his grandfather was a great player, but he's learning more and more the stories about who he was as a human being. And I think he's really taking that in. Very much so. You know, he loves baseball. He's an athlete in his own. I truly believe that he has the ability, God willing, that he won't get hurt or anything. But if he loves the game, I think the game's going to love him because he's got the ability. All the tools are there. He runs like his grandfather.
I've seen him running around, but.
Yeah, he runs. Yeah, you got to see him on the field. It is amazing. It's really uncanny how much he moves like that. So I'm looking forward to see him grow and hopefully continue to love the game. But I want him to really, at the end of the day, I mean, if he's half a quarter of who his grandfather was as a human being, I think he's going to be all right.
Yeah, I would say so. And I bet you he can get a tryout somewhere. Can you imagine that he can show up at the front office or call somebody and say, hey, yeah, I'd like to see about trying out for the team. And they're like, all right, son, what's your name? It's Roberto Clemente III.
Well, he hasn't disappointed so far. They threw him out of T-ball because he was actually kind of, you know, he was one of the youngest guys in his cutoff date. He's always the youngest guy in the league, but so far he's been playing with the older kids, and he's really playing well. So I'm very excited.
That's amazing. So let's talk about some of the stuff that you guys are working on. I went to one of these baseball clinics that you put on for the kids in Munhall, right outside of Pittsburgh, last summer. But you do all kinds of things like that, and you bring former major leaguers in, and you get little kids, younger kids involved in the game, and you give them some teaching and coaching and clinics and get them involved. What kind of stuff? Tell me about the works of the foundation and what you guys have been up to.
Better not only the boys, but also girls. We always encourage girls to get involved. Yeah. We never leave the girls behind. Number one, girls always are part of our program as well. But the foundation really keeping that legacy alive through the work of the clinics, being able to, you know, touch the kids, you know, talk to the kids about not only baseball, but about life as well. And, you know, being able to have all those schools and organizations that carry the name to be part of a network where there's a natural disaster, for example, being able to gather some aid and be able to involve themselves just like Dad did, since they're part of the legacy. Being able to understand that those kids at a young age should be able to be aware of the impact that they can have in society in those moments. So those are things that we really enjoy doing and continue to carry.
And in Pennsylvania, anyway, September 15th has been for the last few years, and I assume it will be again. Is it perpetual now, Roberto Clemente Day on September 15th every year?
Yes. It's here in Pittsburgh. September is officially through Major League Baseball. That's already a set date for MLB. So that's something that you can count on for sure. Yes.
And a couple of things. There's a big wide push. I hear it talked about all the time. People mention it to me when they know I'm a Pirates fan. like they did for Jackie Robinson, retiring. Jackie Robinson's number 42. Major League Baseball wide, no one can wear number 42 anymore in honor of Jackie Robinson. There's a big push to do that for your dad and his iconic number 21. What are your thoughts about that?
Yeah, we are very honored that this is a fan push. This is a fan base push that they've been pushing the issue and the conversation towards Major League Baseball to retire the number. In my case, I truly believe, like I've mentioned before, I believe that baseball is secondary to, you know, what the name really means. And I have a better idea, I believe, a solution that will satisfy everyone. I think that MLB doesn't want to talk about retiring the number. There's a lot of different...
Is that the feedback you get? They don't want to...
I've been getting feedback on that side, but, you know, I myself haven't pushed that issue. I think that, you know, there is a way. I've been lobbying. I've been talking to a few people to perhaps spark the interest Congress being able to come up with a bill for a holiday. We as, right. as Latinos don't have a. If you look at it, there's not one national holiday for a Latino individual in this country. And I think that if there will be one, I don't see why not. Not him who had represented, he's still representing our people the right way. And I don't think that nothing's gonna change that, the way people feel about him. And nothing negative is gonna come about from him, because obviously he's been gone for 50 years and continue to grow his legacy stronger than ever. But I truly believe that he will be a great representative to where if we have his birthday, for example, August 18th as a national holiday, this could be a perfect opportunity for people to be off work and be able to take the kids to a ballpark and be able to talk about who he was. Why am I off? You know, why am I off of work today? I am, you know, it's middle of summer. Well, let's take the kid to the ballpark and enjoy baseball and who he was and have that conversation. And I think that that could go a long way in terms of the legacy and how it would be beneficial to really celebrate that nationwide.
We have talked, you and I have talked about that before, about this idea of a federal holiday of Roberto Clemente Day. And I think that would be a tremendous idea. I noticed this the other day, and I think we probably talked about this. There are no federal holidays at all in the month of August, right?
None. Correct.
And as you just mentioned, no holidays to specifically honor a person of Latino heritage or from Puerto Rico either, right? And so,
correct.
I mean, if not now, when? If not Roberto,
I mean, he does check all the boxes, right? I mean, yeah. He was a Marine. He's a hero. You know, he served this country with honor and honor to be not only a Puerto Rican, but he was even more prouder to be an American. So those are his words. So I truly believe that he's making his own case to hopefully be able to make that happen.
Well, he certainly was, honestly, you know this, and all of baseball knows this, just one of the best of the best. I'm trying to pull up, I have here the kind of the rundown of all of the accolades. As we said, 12 consecutive gold gloves, a 15-time All-Star, won the World Series twice, was the MVP of the 1971 World Series, was the MVP of the National League once, a four-time batting champion. He's in the Pirates Hall of Fame, of course, and he is the only member of the National Baseball Hall of Fame for whom the 5-year waiting period was waived. And they, as soon as the, immediately following the plane crash, they waived that rule and elected him to the Hall of Fame basically immediately, which is, that just shows you, I mean, not only just the kind of a ball player he was, that he was deserving of being in the Hall of Fame, but what they thought about him as a man. To say we're just going to waive that 5-year waiting period rule. He needs to be in the Hall of Fame right now. I mean, what a tremendous legacy. And I know you consider yourself to be blessed having grown up the way you grew up and having the parents, not just your father, but the parents that you had. And I mean, it just, and you have carried, I must say, you've carried the legacy on very proudly, and you're furthering the works that he was doing before his life was taken. So congratulations on that.
Thank you, Tim. Thank you. Appreciate that.
And sure hope to see all of y'all at a Pirates game in the near future. It is baseball season now.
Season. The Pirates are doing well. Amazed that they're doing that well. So we'll see where it goes. The last year they went, 20-8 somewhere there, and then the wheels fell off. So
yeah, they had a fantastic May last year, and they were in first place, and everybody was like, I can't believe this is happening. And then back down to earth, but now they're in first place again. They're 9-3 as we take them.
They have a different team. I think they have a solid team. The potential's there. I figured I had it kind of mapped out that this year they will be competing deep into the season. So we'll see.
I heard somebody say once they had projected to be competitive in 2025, but maybe they have arrived a year early. I don't know. We'll see. A lot of youngsters. They don't know. They don't know what they don't know, and hopefully they won't find out.
And Nick, ignorance is a bliss, right?
That's right. Well, Roberto Clemente Jr., thank you so much for your time. It is always a pleasure to talk to you. And I get to see you a couple times a year when we go out to Pirates games. And I look forward to the next time. Thank you.
Tim, I thank you. But also, look what I got here, my
friend. Oh, my God.
I bought your book. I wanted to let you know I'm going to start reading it today because I got it today. So,
wow. Thank you. So this is the highlight of my month, I got to tell you.
Right here, my friend. I got it. I'm going to read it. So I'll be calling you soon.
Thanks very much, Roberto. Good to see you, and to everybody who's been watching or listening, we appreciate it, because this has been the Line Drive Podcast.